Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well,
a minute past the hour this Friday, the 28th of October, 2011. A cold autumn rain falling here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West Bicod, Virginia. And, I don't know, maybe about time to turn on those infrared heaters here on the front porch. It is Friday on the front porch, on the horn. And that, of course, means more wide-open, freewheeling conversation, even than usual. So I'm looking forward to the next 3 hours. I certainly hope you are as well. Many thanks to those of you who have contributed in the past, all month long. It's been a rough month. The fact of the matter is, we need 125 people between now and Monday night midnight. 125 people to kick in $10 apiece, so that we can finish out the month's fundraising goal. Yeah, on the math on the fly on that's $1,250. Yeah, we got to the halfway point, a little more of this month's fundraising goal. But you know what? We'll find a way. We will find a way. There will be a November. Will there be a Christmas? Well, that we don't know. Because, you know, it's month to month here. It just is. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and oh, by the way, yeah, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab there called Contribute. It also contains the snail mail address for the horn, in case you don't like PayPal, and there are a number of people who don't for a variety of very good reasons. Let's see. There was something on my mind to mention to you, and give me just a minute. It'll crawl up through the bubbling soup that is my mind in a minute, and I'll remember. Let's see, end of October. Oh, yeah, next week. Next week begins the month of November, and next week will be a weird week. I will be gone Thursday and Friday. It's another one of those on the road moments, doing stuff related to mountaintop removal that just kind of has to be done. So I will be I'll be away from the microphone Thursday and Friday, but we'll be okay Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. These things have to be done. The great search for metatarsal protected boots is on. Sheesh, what a pain. Found some, but don't feel like dropping $250 on a pair of boots I'm going to wear once. Ugh. This is just a big, it's a big joke. You know, you've got some citizens, none under 45, who would like to see what's going on up on the mountain, where there's really not supposed to be a lot in the way of blasting going on, but the house just rocked from a big blast going off a couple of minutes before 6 p.m. Kind of tough to figure that one out. And it really does. It kind of creeps your day out when you realize what the blasting means. It means that, for all intents and purposes, the chances of you getting some form of noxious, life-ending cancer have just gone up by some degree. We don't know how much, but every time that crap goes up, that means a little more poison into the water, a little more poison into the air, a little more poison into you. So I was all psyched up for the program, and then the blast went. I was like, "You bastards!" So there we go. That's what that is. Daggone, there was one other thing, and I couldn't... that's frustrating. What was it? I got to learn to start writing stuff down, I guess. It must be that time. No, it is Friday on the front porch, and we can talk about a lot of stuff. One of the things that I tweeted earlier today that is worth thinking about, great big newspaper article in the sports section of the Charleston Gazette today talking about all the carrying on that Senator Blanche Manchin is doing in regard to the finaglings and wranglings leading to West Virginia University leaving for the Big 12 conference. Hoo-wee, I always did want to see Ames, Iowa in late November. Not that there's anything wrong with Ames, Iowa, but it's not exactly, no. I had visions of Athens, Georgia, and Columbia, South Carolina, and Tuscaloosa, and Auburn. You know, hell, once by the time you get to Auburn, you're practically at the damn beach. Baton Rouge, only an hour from New Orleans. But no, we're going to get trips to Lubbock and Ames. Hoo-wee! That'll be some kind of fun. But I got an email right before the program from our buddy Corey in the free state of Louisville. He says, I may be the only fan in town, meaning Louisville, who does not hate WVU right now. One, I blame ESPN for colluding with Pitt to force this upheaval in the Big East Conference to begin with. Two, I blame Bevo for not wanting 12 teams in the Big 12 right now. Three, and I blame Bevo and ESPN for starting their own channel, which kicked us off this entire conference reshuffling business across the country. You get a sense for how big a business college athletics is. And remember, the people who are playing the game are doing so virtually uncompensated. Well, they're on scholarship, Bob. They're getting a free college education. No. Not the vast majority. No. And, of course, the whole point is that Joe Manchin has spent 2 or 3 days practically standing on his well-coiffed head, pitching a fit about this whole Big 12 thing, and has actually, with the first time that he opened his mouth, Joe Manchin had officially shown more concern about WVU's the conference setting than he has shown entirely about people in his own state being poisoned and killed and deformed and malformed and rendered miserable by the coal industry. Way to go, Joe. What a jerk. I mean, does that... When that dawned on me and I was sitting in front of the Twitter earlier today, what the hell? There's this laundry list of cancers and heart disease and pulmonary disease and organ failure and toxicity and it's all verified via peer-reviewed scientific reports, and neither Joe Manchin nor Jay Rockefeller, and that's one of the things Joe did say, by the way, well, I'll have Senator Rockefeller look into this whole thing, meaning the college football mess, on his, because he's the chairman of the Commerce Committee in the Senate. I'll sick Jay Rockefeller on you. But there's no one up there, especially not in West Virginia's congressional delegation, House or Senate side, there's no one there to speak up for poisoned babies or poisoned grown-ups or poisoned children. Meanwhile, every home game, the Mountaineers, many of whom are not from, most of whom, the vast majority of whom are not from West Virginia and don't know much about our heritage, have to rub a filthy, toxic, 350-pound lump of coal from the killing fields of the Upper Big Branch mine every home day in order to honor our miners. I can't think about that without just thinking that karma gonna catch up somewhere. Oh, I know what it was. I know what it was. I've had a couple of notes from folks saying, Bob, well, one of them today said, now that your rerun no longer kicks in after Malloy's every night, .. Well, it still does. I mean, that hasn't been changed. We've just had some technical difficulties on the White Rose end, and I had an email exchange with Ben Birch today, and we are going to get that he. You know, here's a guy who's working 12, 14, 16 hours a day and still finds time to keep all of this stuff going. He will get it sorted out so that the night's rerun begins right after Malloy each evening. That's just a technical hang-up. That's not that hasn't stopped. And for those of you who sent email noting that last night's program was only a fragment on the podcast, about an hour and 14 minutes worth, and it was a darn fine show, too, I must say. That'll be replaced in the podcast file here in the very near future, probably after Ben gets home from work somewhere around midnight tonight. They are working Ben Birch like a borrowed mule. So, those were two things I wanted to make sure that you got. Now, where to go with this Friday on the front porch? You know, of course, all forms, all topics, just about, you know, I mean, everything short of calling up and singing. And if you're really, really good at that, you could do that too. But just generally, no. Everything is wide open. And that's a good thing because there's this huge, gathering together of stuff from far corners of this, that, and the other thing. All of which or none of which may have something to do with each other. I can't resist starting here, since we had an email from Corey in the Free State of Louisville. Let's start in Kentucky. And, you know, this is offensive not just to me or to you or to us or to people who don't necessarily believe the way these freaks believe. It's offensive to people who have very, very strongly held faiths inside Christianity because it makes a mockery of it. Do you remember a couple of years back when the Kentucky legislature, having apparently decided that it had nothing better to do, that all Kentucky's problems were solved, that paradise had landed on earth in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, passed a law having to do with the state's Office of Homeland Security? A law was passed in the Commonwealth of Kentucky that said that the Office of Homeland Security and its executive director must, not should or oughta or might, but must, as in shall, publicize the Commonwealth's, quote, dependence on Almighty God in its training and educational materials, and through a plaque at the entrance to its emergency operations center. You know, if the emergency operations center staff comes through the back door, does that mean that they're not depending on Almighty God? Do you only depend on Almighty God if you're going through the front door? Just asking. And we all kind of said, wow, that's just stupid and crazy, and that can never pass constitutional muster. Constitution, schmonstitution. Because we won the first round, Franklin County Circuit Judge Thomas Wingate had ruled in 2009 that the dependence on Almighty God part actually violated both the United States and the Kentucky Constitutions insofar as they constituted a state establishment of religion. Because, well, I mean, and you can approach it from a number of ways. The Commonwealth of Kentucky depends on Almighty God, but how about the semi-mighty God? Is there no dependence on that deity? Is it a Protestant Almighty God? Is Almighty God the same as Almighty Allah? Almighty Jehovah? Almighty Yahweh? Almighty Huitzilopochtli? Almighty Krishna? Almighty... Now, I won't include Buddhism because the Buddha ain't God and never said he was. I mean, what if it said... does that include Almighty Jesus? Because you're going to get into some real theologically thorny issues if it is. Is it Almighty Osiris? Almighty Zeus? Almighty Odin? You see the problems that arise. If you start naming all the almighties, the damn thing's going to extend from the lintel post all the way down to the floor by the door on that plaque. And that's going to be a big plaque, and it's going to be tough on the wallboard. And then there's the question of if all of these are the almighty, then doesn't that mean that some of them are almightier than others? Duct tape up a can of Mighty Dog? You know, that's God spelled backwards after all. Underneath the plaque. Does Mighty Dog count too? And recognizing some of this, Franklin Circuit Judge Thomas Wingate in 2009 did in fact rule that the phrase was violative of the U.S. and Kentucky constitutions regarding state establishment of religion. Well, too bad. Because the case has found its way, or it wound its way, wended its way, as it were, to the Kentucky Court of Appeals. Now, I don't know that much about the Kentucky court system. I don't know if that's an intermediate level of appeals or whether they're the final say-so before we run on to the Supreme Court of the United States. But the Kentucky Court of Appeals, by a 2-1 margin, well, they overturned Judge Wingate's obviously well-reasoned opinion. I don't know if it was because they were afraid of Almighty Krishna, or Almighty Quetzalcoatl, or Almighty Odin, or just Almighty God. Maybe they were afraid that the Home Office and the Emergency Operations Center of the Kentucky Homeland Security Department would just be rendered, I don't know, maybe it'd get smoted. But by a 2-1 margin, they said that the plaque stays up and the cram down of religion stays in place. And for those of you keeping score of such things, the guy who started this whole mess, the guy who has cost the Commonwealth of Kentucky thousands, if not tens of thousands, of dollars in legal fees, Democrat of, sorry, Corey, Louisville, Representative Tom Reiner, pastor of Christ is King Baptist Church in Louisville. Pastor Tom Reiner, pastor representative, Representative Pastor Tom Reiner, doesn't think the Commonwealth of Kentucky can keep its faith to itself. No, they've got to have public pronouncements. But that big old plaque, Because, you know, that Bible that they hold to be holy, it has injunctions against worshiping of idols and graven images. Even letters are images. The written word is a conceptual representation of spoken words, which are in turn auditory renderings of conscious thought. So there's no way to get around the fact, I personally, I think if they're going to put this one up, they need to put the Ten Commandments, whichever version they choose, on the other side of the door, and just let them duke it out. Because that plaque is, in fact, a graven image. And if it's important enough to spend tens of thousands of Commonwealth taxpayers' dollars over, then it's pretty much rising to the level of its own sort of independent a priori status as deity, is it not? Yeah, I thought so too. So that's a starting place. Lots of other starting places too, or going from, you know what I mean. We could, for instance, speaking of signs, we could talk about the signs held up by right-wing freaks in front of women's reproductive health centers. Or we could talk about the centers that the anti-women's insides movement builds for itself. They call them crisis pregnancy centers. And there is not a damn bit of science or doctoring that goes on inside them. What happens is the minute that some poor pregnant female walks inside one of these things, the shame parade begins. You filthy, filthy thing. You dirty, dirty woman. You carrier of original sin. No, once the door closes behind the woman who enters one of these godforsaken crisis pregnancy center, a level of mental and emotional abuse begins that would not be tolerated inside a prison. And here's the fun part. You get to pay for some of it. Yeah, that's right. Crisis pregnancy centers that have nothing to do with doctoring or women's health or their ability to control what goes on inside their own bodies are partially, at least partially, funded by taxpayer dollars. Nice, huh? Well, it gets worse. The National Abortion Rights Action League, not too awfully long back, about a week ago or less, issued a report about these con artist these con artist centers. And the picture painted is not a pretty one. Among other things, let's see, how about the Carolina Pregnancy Center? A Woman's Choices, the Center for Women. There are 8 times as many of them in the state of North Carolina, for instance, as there are clinics that actually do the medicine involved with women's reproductive health. And the state of North Carolina is about to weigh up these phony baloney, the circus sideshow freak centers fundings. Again, out of the pockets of taxpayers. Now, it took about a year for the National Abortion Rights Action League to complete its report. It is, therefore, rather, they were into detail. They investigated these phony baloney so-called clinics in New York, in California, in Maryland, in Texas, in Virginia, in North Carolina. Among the more significant findings of NARAL's report, the majority of the centers it investigated in North Carolina had, and I told you this a minute ago, but don't rely on me, no medical professionals on staff whatsoever at all. None. Zero. Zip. Not even so much as a certified nursing assistant. Zero. Of that majority, only 25% of them even disclosed to the women entering their doors that they were not in any wise medical facilities. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you'll maybe you won't see what I saw. Relevance of this, but when I was thinking about what the posting would be inside such a center, I got to thinking it should read something like, "Warning, this crisis pregnancy center is utterly unable to offer you any sort of medical advice whatsoever at all. This is not a medical facility. These people will berate you and prey upon your emotions, your fears, and your otherwise fragile state of mind in order to try to convince you to keep that zygote implanted in your uterus. They will threaten you. They will cajole you. They will coerce you. This is not a medical facility," right? It reminded me, well, because I'm kind of twisted, it reminded me, of course, and just about everything does, it reminded me of this little moment of brilliance from the Python Lads.
Mr. Milton, you are sole proprietor or landowner of the Wizzo Chocolate Company,
I am.
Superintendent Parrott and I are from the Hygiene Squad. We want to have a word with you about your box of chocolates entitled The Wizzo Quality Assortment.
Ah, yes.
If I may begin at the beginning. First, there is the cherry fondue.
Oh.
This is extremely nasty, but we can't prosecute you for that.
Agreed.
Next, we have number four. Crunchy frog.
Ah, yes.
Am I right in thinking there's a real frog in here?
Yes, a little one.
What sort of frog?
A dead frog.
Is it cooked?
No.
What, a raw frog?
We use only the finest baby frogs, dew-picked and flown from Iraq, cleansed in the finest quality spring water, lightly killed, and then sealed in a succulent Swiss quintuple-smooth triple-cream milk chocolate envelope and lovingly frosted with glucose.
This is maybe instead of frog.
Oh, what else?
Well, don't you even take the bones out?
If we took the bones out, it wouldn't be crunchy, would it?
Superintendent Parrott ate one of those.
Excuse me a moment. It says crunchy frog quite clearly.
Well, the superintendent thought it was an almond whirl. People won't expect there to be a frog in there. They're bound to think it's some form of mock frog.
Mock frog? We use no artificial preservatives or additives of any kind.
Nevertheless, I must warn you that in future you should delete the words crunchy frog and replace them with the legend crunchy, raw, unboned, real dead frog if you want to avoid prosecution.
What about our sales?
I'm not interested in your sales. I have to protect the general public. Now, how about this one? It was number five, wasn't it? Number five, Ram's Bladder Cup. What kind of confection is this?
We use choicest juicy chunks of fresh Cornish ram's bladder, emptied, steamed, flavored with sesame seeds, whipped into a fondue, and garnished with lark's vomit.
Lark's vomit?
Correct.
Well, it don't say nothing about that here.
Oh, yes, it does. On the bottom of the box, after monosodium glutamate.
Here.
Well, I hardly think this is good enough. I think it would be more appropriate if the box bore a large red label warning lots of it.
Oh, sales would plummet.
Well, why don't you move into more conventional areas of confectionery, like praline or lime cream? A very popular flavour, I'm led to understand. I mean, look at this one. Cockroach cluster. Anthrax ripple. What's this one? Spring surprise.
Oh, no, that's our speciality. Covered in darkest creamy chocolate, when you pop it in your mouth, steel bolts spring out and plunge straight through both cheeks.
Well, where's the pleasure in that? If people place a nice chocky in their mouths, they don't want their cheeks pierced. In any case, this is an inadequate description of the sweetmeat. I should have to ask you to accompany me to the station.
It's a fair cop.
Stop talking to the camera.
I'm sorry.
If only the general public would take more care when buying its sweeties, it would reduce the number of man-hours lost to the nation, and they would spend less time having their stomachs pumped and sitting around in public lavatories.
You get the idea. There's no... But of course, you know, in a minute... But it, no, it's not just down in Jesus land. It's in New York, in California, Maryland, yes, Texas, Virginia, North Carolina. I'm sure there are others in other parts of, you know, the Alabama stand, Mississippi stand, Georgia stand, Arkansas stand. And, of course, they prey on young women. Not necessary, and they prey on women who have not had how do we say this without sounding elitist, because that's not my intent, who have not been given educational advantages. You just come on right in here, darling. Oh, you poor little thing, you filthy harlot, you spread your legs, didn't you? Well, let's talk about why Jesus wants to forgive you, you slut. No, they don't say that, but they think it that way. Yeah, so only a quarter of them disclosed that they weren't medical facilities. You know, and even then it's in the fine print. Not great big red letters, not a medical facility, incompetent to care for your health. It might harm or kill you to be here, which is, you know, like Crunchy Frog, what the sign ought to say. Real, live, undead, unboned frog. Uncooked, okay. And, you know, who knows? Maybe there's even a little bit more connection between the two, because, after all, baby frogs look a lot like baby humans in the womb. You know, that tadpole phase. But let's see, more than two-thirds provided distorted or false information about abortion risks and consequences. You know what those are. That's the one that says, when that evil hand of Satan rips your fetus out of your God-given uterus womb, that baby's going to feel the pain, and you're going to feel the pain for the baby, and you'll be tormented, and maybe even suicidal. Right? Yeah. But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. I mean, maybe you think, oh, you know, that's just Bob. Yeah, that's hyperbole. They don't really do that there. Take the case of one Jewish lady who posed as a pregnant woman, because, you know, when you're in the first trimester, you don't start showing. So just, I mean, and that's the problem with these womb fascists. You know, there could be there's pregnant women walking around everywhere, and we don't necessarily know it. A Jewish lady posing as a pregnant woman went into five centers, Five. Count them. One, two, three. Yeah, five. She went into five separate centers. And at five different centers, upon... And we don't have this part. We don't have this part of the story. We don't know if the name was a giveaway, or if it was a matter of bigotry by appearance, or if she checked a... Well, hell, why not? On the little form, they've got, you know, what is your religion? Christianity, 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 or that box that says other with a line out from it. She checks other and writes Jewish. At five different centers. Which tells you, you know, when you get up to five, it tells you that there's a concerted effort being made along these lines. At five different centers, this woman was informed that she could not go to heaven unless she converted to Christianity. Do you see now the connection between this and the story about the Kentucky plaque? Those are taxpayer dollars paying for that stupid, dumbass plaque, and it's taxpayer dollars that are supporting some religious bigot in a carnival sideshow operation somewhere in North Carolina, Jesus Land. Taxpayer dollars supporting some religious bigot looking at a woman who is ostensibly in a crisis pregnancy and saying, well, honey, unless you have a close personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, honey, you can't go to heaven. One volunteer even said, what you really need to do, honey, is become a born-again virgin. I mean, it's bad enough that they're peddling magic from 2,000 years ago. Now they're peddling it in the present. You just sit there in the stirrups, honey. I'll tell you when the hymen grows back. See, look, it's another miracle. She's a born-again virgin. Jesus done give her a brand-new hymen. And you helped. Not that you did so consciously. This is not some sort of indictment of you know, a group dynamic guilt by association. But they are. They are my tax dollars and your tax dollars and our tax dollars. Going to fundamentalist hustlers. This all happened in North Carolina at the same time, of course, that Planned Parenthood was defunded. They've even got a Choose Life license plate that will send the fees to these filthy, filthy, filthy places. This is nothing new, of course. Since 2006, we've known via a congressional investigation that the vast majority of federally funded crisis pregnancy centers, you know, religion industry outposts is what they are, provided false or misleading information to women, often suggesting that there are links between abortion and breast cancer. That's one of their favorites, that it causes infertility, and, of course, that it causes mental illness and suicide. Ooh-wee! Yeah. And then, of course, there's Mississippi. You know they've got them some crisis pregnancy centers, too, right? Of course they do. A story I found over at Pam's House Blend. She's an amazing, amazing blogger. Talking about the run-up to ballot measure 26 in the state of Mississippistan. and what the religious fundamentalist freaks are actually talking about there, what they're admitting. Human life would begin not at birth, but at the moment of fertilization. If the amendment passes, it will outlaw abortion in the state entirely, even in cases of rape or incest. They are desperately trying to get, as we've discussed on the program earlier, they're desperately trying to get both Roe versus Wade and Griswold versus Connecticut under review by the crop of ugly fascists that dominate the Supreme Court of the United States. The American Family Association is busy in this effort. They are, after all, from Tupelo, Mississippi. Stan. Les Riley is a former candidate for agriculture commissioner in Mississippi, Stan. Chair of the State Constitution Party. Now, they Pam Spalding quoting Mississippi anti-abortion activists, quoting from a Mother Jones story, Mississippi anti-abortion activists want to define personhood as starting when a sperm fertilizes an egg. In that case, it would likely make intrauterine devices, IUDs, which can prevent pregnancy by blocking the implantation of a fertilized egg in the uterus, illegal because it prevents conception. It prevents the creation of a human being, or as I like to think of them, fetizens. But the law could also introduce the possibility of banning any form of hormonal birth control, generally the pill. Some anti-abortion groups argue the patch, the shot, the ring, they all work by stopping ovulation, but also they work by preventing implantation of a fertilized ovum in the wall of the uterus. This is scary. Now, by the way, people are lining up left and right behind this filthy piece of legislation. One of the latest supporters to speak out loudly and vociferously is Deanna Favre. Yeah, that Favre, Brett Favre's wife, you know, Brett Favre who texted pictures of his penis to a woman who wasn't Deanna Favre. Yeah, that Brett Favre. Yeah, she supports this. Which is curious because, as I found out doing a little further reading, Brett and Deanna Favre have two children. I don't know if that means they're sleeping in separate beds like Lucy and Ricky, or maybe in separate houses. But you would think that they would have one of those quiver baby families if they believed that every time a... Right, yeah. Because Mississippi's Prop 26, guys, you're not out of the loop either. You could be a criminal as well in Mississippi. Because condoms prevent fertilization. Because it blocks the union of sperm and egg. These are disturbing times. More than, I suppose. But all kinds of questions. What happens if you come from a civilized state and you go to Mississippi? And no offense to our Mississippi listeners, and we have them. If this thing passes, does a woman have to stop at the state line and remove her IUD? Does she have to wait? Does she have to go off the pill for a month before she can cross into Mississippi Stan so that she can be appropriately fertile for Jeebus? Hey, guys, you know that funny little ring in the back of your wallet and that condom that you've been carrying for the last 14 years? Okay, not really. That's mainly an adolescent thing. But no, you're going to have to stop at the state line and get that thing, throw that in the garbage. Thank God Ronald Reagan's not around. That'd really piss him off.
Well, I had to throw my condom away when I got to Mississippi, and then I had to buy another one, and that was that was 59 cents out of my pocket, honey.
Isn't it interesting, on the one hand, that these right-wingers want to force a full faith and credit standard on gun permits, concealed carry permits, so that, let's say, you get one in, say, Texas, where they give them out in gumball machines, and the state of New York has to recognize it and let Cletus T. Bumfuck walk down Times Square with a hand cannon strapped to his hip? They want that. But on the other hand, they don't like the idea of full faith and credit if it comes to a woman's right to control when and if and how she has a baby. Because remember, them fetuses has rights. And you know what? How far is it from the fetus having human being rights to having voting rights? I mean, that's not so crazy, is it? Jesus, Rick Bro Fro Mix Santorum can extrapolate that gay marriage will lead to people coupling with animals in the streets. That's why he's called Man on Dog Santorum. So why can't I suggest that it won't be long before the fundamentalists are arguing that fetuses have a right to vote as transmitted, and their will be transmitted through the placental across the placental barrier, up through the umbilicus, into the being of the mother, who will then translate to her husband, who will cast the fetuses' vote for it. Because, of course, we wouldn't want the woman doing that, because it's bad enough she's got her own vote in the first place. This whole thing is geared toward getting her shoes off and her pregnant ass back in the kitchen where it belongs. This is going to be a mess. But this is, but the, I guess the larger point or the larger idea behind it is, this is where things like secession really do get started. Slavery. The North didn't want it, the South did. We had a civil war. Fetuses. The South wants them, the North doesn't. I don't think we'll have a civil war this time. Maybe it'll just be a referendum and they'll decide to leave. And this time there are probably enough people in the United States who are willing, goodbye. And that bothers me. That doesn't bother me. That scares me. That terrifies me. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the kind of, I mean, if you want to know what a Jesus Land Confederacy would look like, all you have to do is look at the proposed legislation of this Congress, since this House of Representatives, since it took power. No Social Security, no Medicare, no Medicaid, only de minimis VA benefits, if at all, compulsory religious recognition, severe limitations on the franchise. You don't want to be there. David in Tennessee asking a highly relevant question. Down there in Mississippi, Stan, would a woman be checked for an IUD prior to completing other surgeries? Could that refusal on personal convictions crap come into play? In other words, if she has an IUD, could an upstanding, God-fearing surgeon say, honey, you're going to have to die of that cancer because you've been killing babies every day of your life? This isn't hyperbole. This is a projected reality that arises out of this insanity. And is there anybody willing to take a $5 bill and bet it on Mississippi having the common good sense to reject this ballot measure 26? I mean, I play the lottery every week and everything. It's my retirement program. What do you want? I think of the lottery as a voluntary tax on the inordinately optimistic. But I wouldn't bet $5. I wouldn't bet a dollar on Mississippians rejecting this ballot measure. By the way, Corey, writing in from the Free State of Louisville about Representative Pastor Tom Reiner, he says, he's not my state rep, but I think this is the one Democrat in Louisville who is more like a Democrat in the state rather than one from the city. Reed, not a real Democrat. He got primaried last time around and barely survived, I'll bet because of his name recognition. Besides, the guy is a reverend leader of a church. How can anything that he says be bigoted, destructive, and embarrassing? Plus, you know, being as he's a pastor, he's got the power to say, listen, if you don't vote for me, you're going to the hot place. Guess why he got primaried, says Corey. I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh writing. Odd, isn't it? Remember, the state of Alabama, Stan, has outlawed the sale and use of marital aids. Guns, yes. Autoeroticism, no. Sometimes being a Southerner is very embarrassing. Yeah, more than a little bit. But, you know, there's a reason, Ron, that autoeroticism is illegal. That self-congratulation, if you will. There's a very good reason. Because if you don't make it illegal in Alabama, your good upstanding ministers will be dropping dead. Well, kind of gives a whole new meaning to dead by his own hand, if you know what I mean. And you do know what I mean. Right. Kind of reminds me of actual evidence of what happens when you let pastors have access to sexual aids. Tools. How's that? Tools, yeah. So there's our first hour of the horn this evening, Friday on the front porch. Sorry for the filibuster, but some of those just kind of had to get out of the way. Honey, you know, you might die giving birth, and you won't go to heaven if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. I mean, that Judaism's all well and good, sweetheart, but you gotta have Jesus. He's one of yours after all. Just tell him, Lord Jesus, come into my heart and cleanse me of all my filthy thoughts and my sins and dirtiness and however it was I got this way. Just do it, honey, and he'll grow you a brand new, you know, thingy. Yeah. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
good Christian. Got a good congregation. My wife's on vacation, and the kids are all grown. I've got me some swimsuits. Rubber's my desire. Got a head mask of latex that makes me just moan. Send me a dildo. I can't buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy, but the deacons can't know. Just give me one ear hole that I can breathe in through. Hog tie me with bungees, fix them just so. Young man, I went to seminary, prayed to Jesus to cleanse me of my dirty thoughts. I prayed and got married. We had a baby. Rubber and latex got me all tied up.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, just in case you were thinking that that song was some sort of made up something, no. It's a very real story. It goes back to, oh, golly gee, 2007. And the Reverend Gary Aldridge, who in fact had been a close associate, whatever the hell that means, of the Reverend Jerry Falwell. His wife really did go on vacation, home to visit family, you know, as they say. And, well, that's when the business with two wetsuits, a head mask, rubberized underwear, gloves, slippers, and the aforementioned things that you can't buy in Montgomery came out to play, or went into play, depending on how you want it. Oh, leave it alone, Bob! Yeah, but that's one of those little gems that, well, I wrote it, but it became magic when John Fox applied his musical talents to it. It's 2 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. And, well, anything is fair game. Bring anything to the table to talk about that you want to, pretty much within reason, you know. But this is what they want. They want that. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of story that, well, you don't hear out of Iran because they clamp it all down real good. And even that story about Reverend Aldridge never would have come out had the Montgomery Advertiser, the newspaper down there, not pursued the autopsy report. Reverend Aldridge, by the way, had spent a considerable amount of time as a youth pastor. The two youths. Two what's counts? Yeah. Youth minister. So, yeah. Okay. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4 ahead on. Direct dial 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. I know, Jim. I know.
How are you?
Yeah, you know, it's Friday. I'll be okay.
Well, do you have your garlic and wolfsbane positioned around your house?
I've got that, and I've got a cross, and you know, the whole, yeah, all the silver bullets, you know,
made by an old world craftsman.
Nothing but old world craftsmanship for me, Jim.
I hear you. Well, God, you got off to the start tonight. That's for sure. That explosion must have really. Well, encourage your ire.
I wouldn't be surprised if you couldn't hear them every now and then where you are, Jim, because they carry a long way. We had a big old blast over across the river a few months back. We heard it here, and they heard it down in the western end of Raleigh County on Peachtree Creek. And it really does. It messes with your day. Messes with your mind.
I'm sure it does. No, I can't hear you this. Thankfully. However, what can I say? You're doing all you can.
Yeah. Well, I've been shopping for metatarsal boots, protective eyewear, and metacarpal gloves, and we may have to postpone the site visit again until we can get this stuff all in. It's ridiculous.
Well, God, what do they want y'all to appear in, a dominatrix outfit?
If we showed up in a wetsuit, somebody'd like that.
It probably would, since you were talking about the Rubbermaid parson. I just wonder what he was... I'm pretty liberal about all those things, and I've seen a lot, like Mae West once said, excuse me, some people have been places and seen things, and I've been things and seen places. But as far as all that other Bruno-type paraphernalia, I'm sure you can remember that scene in that particular movie.
All too well.
I don't rebuke it, but I just don't understand it, if you know what I mean.
Sure, and that's the thing, Jim. None of us have to understand it. As long as nobody's getting hurt and everybody's consenting, I don't see what the problem is. But, of course, the right wing and the fundamentalists and stuff define that. That's your liberal anything-goes secular humanist mentality. Ain't nothing dirty to them no more. How are you going to define sin when it's like that?
Well, I guess they can take things like that and run a long way with it, that's for sure. They normally do. You know that, and I know that.
Well, that's the absolute truth. But you know what? I'm kind of proud. I'm kind of proud of Clint Eastwood. I've long been a fan of Clint Eastwood films and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Granted, he's what you'd call... that sort of endangered species. He is a liberal California Republican.
Oh, yeah.
But he recently offered up his thoughts on people having a hissy about gay people getting married, or marriage equality, as we like to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the following. I think you'll be impressed, too, Jim. These people who are making a big deal out of gay marriage... I don't give a fuck about who wants to get married to anybody else. We're making a big deal out of things we shouldn't be making a big deal out of. They go on and on with all this bullshit about sanctity. Don't give me that sanctity crap. Just give everybody the chance to have the life they want.
Bob, you do that well. Play Misty for me. You do. Oh, my Lord. That's beautiful country where he lives. It really is.
Carmel by the Sea.
Oh, yeah. And I remember when I was in Monterey, a bunch of us went down to Nepenthe, that restaurant that was pictured in the film The Sandpiper with Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
And Richard Burton is the defrock priest, and I forget who else was in it. It came out in 1965. Damn good movie. But we went to Nepenthe. So it was a really nice experience.
It occurs to me the problem with these, I not kidding. I am proud of Clint Eastwood for just saying it plain like that. More people, the folks ought to hear that.
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
I'd like to see him say that about a half an inch away from Rick Santorum's nose, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, what I'd like to see him do is take his fist and connect it with Rick Santorum's nose and then connect it with other parts of his head. Maybe it knocks some sense into that fool, but I doubt it.
Well, the sad thing about Rick Santorum is I think he'd probably enjoy it.
He probably would. I mean, there's something really bizarre in that man's character and personality. I mean, there's just something there that... it just doesn't quite compute with me. I mean, I don't know what you would call it, whether it's gaydar or radar or schmadar or Hoodar or whatever. But there are all kinds of red lights that go on when I hear him and heard some of the stuff he's had to say.
I think there's something inherent. I'm sorry. I think there's just something mentally wrong with someone who brings a dead fetus home and shows it to his 5 and 6 year old children, and has them sit around and talk to it. I mean, there really is. I mean, there's something Hannibal Lecter about that. There's something. What was his name? Cowboy Bob about that.
Oh, you mean the guy who had the girl in the well?
Yeah.
God only knows, he was a strange character too. But I think it'd be a good idea for every person who is running for office like that to have to take the MMPI or some type of psychological evaluation thing. I really do. I know that's not possible.
Jim, that'd clear out Congress.
Well, I mean, you know, hell, half of them can't get a credit card in their own name. So, I mean, you know, as long as you get a check their credit check, you may as well check their psychological check as well, or whatever you want to call it, or psychological fitness to hold office, because there's some people up there right now who are just absolutely crazy.
Well, crazy is one thing. Sick is another. And these people are sick, Jim. You know, Grover Norquist famously said that he wanted to make government small enough to drown in a bathtub.
Yeah, I know.
And they talk, we want small government, we want small government. And now it turns out, I mean, and the case in Mississippi is a case in point. What, they're really serious about small government. They want a government small enough to fit inside a woman's uterus. That's...
But the government is big enough to tell everybody what they have to do in their personal life.
That's
both ways, friend.
Yeah, I know. And if you recall the Green News report from last night, and Desi Doyen talking about what you had already mentioned, that we're going to cross the 7 billion human beings on this planet line somewhere around Halloween.
That'd be an appropriate date for it to happen. Yeah, 7 billion.
These religious zealots, these cruel, hate-filled creatures actually want to compel the production of more people on the planet?
I know. But, you know, whatever happened to the thing that I always thought our government was built on as far as human rights are concerned, is that your rights end where my nose begins.
Apparently noses are out now. It goes all the way to the fallopian tubes.
Well, speaking figuratively, yes, it does. But, I mean, who are these people to exalt themselves to such a point that they can impose their beliefs and their strictures and wacky ideas upon me? I mean, I've certainly not out tried to convert them to anything. Never have, never tried. Didn't want to.
And maybe that's why we are, our side is our side and their side is their side, because they want to. I mean, whether it's this or the hate-filled law in Alabama about immigrants, they want to, you know, for all the bitching they do about Sharia law, Jim, that's what they want to establish south of the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, Jesus Christ, sorry.
That's okay.
In Alabama? I mean, there's been all manner of craziness. And, you know, you may remember I talked a couple of weeks ago about the fact that if you're Hispanic, you are presumed illegal and can't get your electricity or running water turned on in the state of Alabama now. Well, now, you want the latest little bit of insanity?
Now, wait a minute. That means if you are illegally there... Is that what that means, Hispanic or?
Yeah, if you are deemed to be illegally in the state of Alabama, you are not entitled to electricity or running water.
Like these migrant workers that they hire and bring up on during season, so they can get it done so much more cheaply. People like that.
Yes.
Well, I mean, how can they encourage these people to come up and, you know, hew the wood and draw the water for them? and, you know, pay them dirt wages. And
well, that's the problem they're having, Jim, because they're not coming to the tomatoes and so forth are rotted in the fields. It got so bad that one Alabama farmer went to one of the Republicans, the one who referred to African-American folks as Aborigines, and this white, you know, literally red-necked farmer handed him a bucket and said, here's the bucket we use when we're picking tomatoes. Why don't you come on down and pick for a spell and see how hard these folks work and how bad we need them? And, of course, the besuited Republican conservative family values Alabama senator said, well, I certainly sympathize with your plight, and we'll see what we can do to get you some help. And the farmer, Matt Osborne, chronicled all of this over at his site. The farmer threw the bucket on the ground and said, well, I figured that's how it'd be with you. I mean, and I'm sure that every time that man gets a chance to go vote, he marches in thinking about how he's voting his good, upstanding, fine, Bible-believing, God-fearing, family values, conservative conscience. But look where it's got him. He's going to get ruined. But yeah, if somebody is deemed illegal and tries to get electricity in the state of Alabama, they are deemed by this crazy-ass law, Jim, to have committed a felony that subjects them to a prison term of 10 years.
For trying to obtain utilities.
It's that's how broadly the law is written. Also, if undocumented immigrant, let's say that they're trying to be a good citizen and they go to pay their state taxes. You know, Alabama has the most brutal state income taxes in the nation as far as poor people are concerned. And let's say an individual goes to, an undocumented immigrant goes to pay his Alabama state taxes. That is also a felony that can subject him to a 10-year prison term. If he doesn't pay his taxes at all, it's a 5-year felony.
Well, they may as well go ahead and pull up the Nuremberg race laws of 15 September 1935 and put them into effect.
Well, Jim, it's not exactly like may as well. It's what they've done. I mean, this is so crazy that now in the state of Alabama, you cannot get a library card without proof of legal status or citizenship. Remember all the ballyhoo when the internet began sort of catching on, and things like that were time consuming and pain in the ass, like getting your license tag or renewed. Suddenly you could do it online. Well, Alabama did that too, and now because of this law, they've had to backtrack on that, and you've got people missing work and standing in line for hours on end. Because you can't do it online anymore because you have to show up in person at the courthouse and prove that you're white.
Like I say, this is, I think they've taken the pattern of certain laws that were passed in the 30s in Germany, and they're, you know, replicating them. They really are. I mean, isn't the effect just the same? I know I keep going back.
Ultimately it is.
I know I keep going back to that period of history, and I know people are tired of hearing me talk about it, but I mean, to me, that's exactly what's coming to pass.
Yeah, you've got to, in Alabama, you got to, and remember, it's not just Alabama. Georgia's got one of these, too. It's just that Alabama's is even more insane. I mean, Alabama's law is crazier than Arizona's SB 1070, for God's sakes. It's breathtaking to see what's going on there.
Well, that type of social engineering just doesn't work. I mean, it may work for them for a time, but eventually something's going to have to give. And that's exactly what these laws are. It's social engineering and racial engineering.
And remember, ultimately this thing will be tested in the Supreme Court of the United States.
Oh, boy.
Now, do you have any faith in it being struck down?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I mean, let's count the votes. Votes in favor of Alabama's law. Alito, Scalia, Roberts, Thomas. And then all they've got to do is browbeat that poor little milk, that poor, the tired old milksop, Anthony Kennedy, and you've got your 5-4.
Well, that certainly doesn't bode well.
I mean, isn't this the imprint going forward into the future? You know, Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly talk a lot about nullification. John C. Calhoun showed up in the conversation this past Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah.
We've been here before if we only know the history enough to look and see it, whether it's 1936 or whether it's 1836.
Well, I remember this when John C. Calhoun, Jackson's vice president, tried that nullification business. Jackson had one very short sentence. He said, "You do this, and I'll come down there, and I'm going to hang you higher than Haman."
And they backed down.
Yeah, they did. Now, I'm no real friend of Andrew Jackson's to a certain point as far as what he did to the American Indian and how he broke all his promises with them. And he was, in certain respects, a political careerist, but he did have respect for the Union, and he said the Union must and will be preserved, and I'm not going to have any of you South Carolinians or whatever disturbing it. And if you do, you're going to pay the consequence. They knew damn well he would, because he wasn't anybody you messed around with. I mean, Andrew Jackson was somebody, if you got in his way, he'd just take his cane out and beat the shit out of you. And did so on a number of occasions to people who bothered him. And how many duels did he fight?
Oh, God.
I mean, he died with, I don't know, one or two bullets in his body they couldn't remove. And, you know, he came from a pretty tough background. You know, he was actually, when he was a boy, kept prisoner at Camden. The British had a fort there.
Right.
And I've been over the ruins of the building where it stood. And, you know, he was kept there, and that's where he refused allegedly, I think he probably did receive the lash of that British saber because he wouldn't shine that guy's boots. But, I mean, we need a strong man like that who will say, look, you know, you people are going in the wrong way, and this is not going to happen. But I'm afraid we don't have that right now. I don't know if we'll ever have it again.
I'm with you. I don't know. And Andrew Jackson was a Southerner too, and of course, and that added credence to what he did.
Andrew Jackson, of course, engaged in mass deportations of tribes and things like that on the Trail of Tears, and Hitler got his ideas from that. He said, "If it worked for him, it'll work for me." I mean, that's exactly, you know, what the Nazis did to minorities and people they didn't like. And, you know, they patterned themselves after American history. They did.
Well, it's just, it's hard for me to try to, you know, we were talking about the future a little bit, and you asked me a couple of nights ago, well, you know, what after 2016, et cetera. It's hard for me to look at stuff like this, Jim, and see an America that can stay together. Because it's becoming more and more obvious that whether it's Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi or Arizona or Oklahoma or Kansas, they don't want to. They don't want to be part of a functioning nation anymore. And it grieves me to my soul.
Well, you know, it's the polarization, lack of civility, and imbecility. It's really trying to tear this country apart. I mean, people are so polarized and they're so divided that there's no reasoning with a lot of these guys. I mean, they just can't see anything but their own narrow point of view, and they're going to have it, the world be cleft in two and cast into the void. They really are. I mean, I can remember when people were a lot more, less polarized, a lot friendlier, a lot more amenable to other people's ideas and the acceptance thereof. But those elements are really, really quickly disappearing, and that is not what this country was based on. I mean, we're based on basically consensus and common sense to a certain extent. Of course, our history of this country in many instances has not been based on consensus. Has not been based on fair play, and has not been based on common decency.
It certainly hasn't been based on concepts of equality, that's for certain.
No, it hasn't. I mean, you've had so many people who have been mistreated because they were either American natives, or whether they were black, or whether they were any other thing except really white. And, you know, that's not what it's all about. I mean, people are human beings, and human beings are the same color once you part the skin and see if it's all pink on the inside. I'm not trying to be...
No, I know, you're not, no.
...objectionable here, but, I mean, you know, we're all, in the eyes of these people, supposedly God's children, and have the right to be treated with decency and equality and the way that, you know, basic Christian doctrine, you know, teaches. Well, they may trumpet it, and they may use it as a weapon, and they may blow bugles about it, but people who do stuff like this, they certainly are not practicing it. That's for damn sure.
And the question becomes one of, is it, and I guess that's the center of my inquiry, Jim, is there any way to turn this back? Is there any way to step back from this abyss?
I don't know, Bob. Once people get things, certain things set in their minds, it's very hard to change them. And I can understand why Khrushchev once made the statement. As cruel and hard as it may be, there are certain mistakes that only the grave will correct. He said that.
Yeah. And he also said, we'll conquer you without firing a shot, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He said, we'll bury you and all this kinds of stuff.
Well, no, I mean, I think there's some relevance there. Because what he was alluding to was not some sort of overt Soviet hostility toward the United States, but rather the fact that the United States would be its own undoing.
Yeah, economically. I mean, Khrushchev was a big blowhard, and he knew the horrors of war. He had grown up during the Russian Civil War, and, you know, he had come up the hard way on the...
Well, wasn't he at Stalingrad?
Yeah, he was the commander of Stalingrad, and he was the one who basically said, if they don't shoot you, I will, particularly if you turn and run. I mean, you know, those were his direct orders from the Politburo, from Stalin himself. He also was the one who built the metro in Moscow. He was the one behind that, and a cost of many lives, you know, that metro was built. And the Battle of Stalingrad was won. So, you know, but even Khrushchev, to a certain point, could be reasoned with.
Well, certainly. Certainly.
He understood what war could do to a country and what, you know, the horrors of war.
And what a dichotomy you've just brought to light, Jim. Because, you know, you say something like, well, even Khrushchev could be reasoned with. You know what? Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, junior senator of Alabama, cannot be reasoned with.
Yeah, I know.
These hard-shell Republicans that control the legislature of a state like Alabama cannot be reasoned with. The same thing goes for Mississippi. Arguably, the same thing goes for Georgia. The same thing largely goes for the entire South right now. They cannot be reasoned with.
Seems as though they want to reestablish their confederacy or something, which is absolutely nuts.
Well, I don't think it is coincidence that they have resurrected and made central tenets of state party platforms the doctrine of nullification that caused such consternation before the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how in what universe can a state's actions be superior to the federal government's? I mean, it turns every concept, every civic concept of this country on its ear to even suggest that.
I know, Bob. Have you ever read Mary Chestnut's Diary from Dixie?
I have.
Now there is an interesting introspect of the mindset of the people in her part of the world during the American Civil War and before it. Because even a lot of these, even Mrs. Chestnut, Mrs. Barry Boykin Chestnut, realize that no good would come of this. I mean, even though after secession, I mean, she was there in Richmond surrounding everything and being a part of the parties and social whirl of that thing. But, you know, when you read diaries like that, you gain a certain amount of introspection about the mindset of the person who is writing them. And she was a very well-educated woman. She came from Mulberry Plantation, which is just south of where I grew up.
And she was writing about, she was living in Charleston, wasn't she?
She was in Charleston. She was all over the place. She hated Mulberry Plantation because she wanted to be where the action was. She wanted to be where all the stuff was going on. And she was there when the Citadel Cadets fired on Fort Sumter on, I think it was April 19th, 1861, if I'm not mistaken. Don't hold me to that date, but she was there. And, you know, and when they, of course, met and the Union is dissolved and the whole thing started, which was just a horrible bloodletting operation, which this country performed upon its own body. I mean, it was a virtual, our version of the English War of the Roses. I mean, you know, good Lord, we lost, what, over 600,000 people in that war?
Yeah.
And the whole South was practically destroyed. And, you know, just they came home to nothing.
But apparently not destroyed enough, Jim. And that's tough for me as a, you know, as a Southerner myself, that's tough for me to say. But I think it's true.
Well, they came home to nothing but burnout fields and chimneys and things of that nature. And, you know, I don't want to see that happen in this country. I don't want to see people so polarized and so divided that they can't at least get together and agree on certain things and not pass these terrible laws that are, you know, so restrictive and for states to try to supersede federal law. Because, if that happens, then the whole Constitution is subverted. I mean, even Article 10.
And that's the larger point. That is their goal, Jim.
Well, they're basing this on what? The Article 10 of the Constitution, what the powers reserved to the states.
No, well, the 10th Amendment, yeah.
Well, that's just not going to work. It didn't work then, it's not going to work now. I don't know why they think it will. And I don't know.
Well, you know, Texas Betsy just said something trenchant in the chat room. She said, "Bob, you can't reason with a theocracy," and it's the truth.
Well, there have been situations in which theocracies have made, shall we say, certain deals for certain reasons. You know, the Roman Catholic Church is a good example of it in its development in history in the Middle Ages and things of that nature, when they've made, you know, temporary arrangements and stuff like that. But I guess when it came back to it, they weren't intent on keeping these particular concessions, if they you could call them that. But, I mean, yeah, theocratic societies are very difficult to deal with because they go beyond the, in many respects, the scope of reason and the scope of just common sense. And that is indeed very regrettable.
Indeed, it is. And the question remains. And I'm not trying to be alarmist, but
well,
can the Union survive this? Because sooner or later, whether it be Mississippi's personhood thing or the immigration laws of Georgia, Alabama, Arizona, whatever, or even the specious challenges to the Affordable Care Act, the South is not going to sit still for being told no. I mean, why else would you bring up a dead doctrine from 170 years ago like nullification?
I know. Well, nations are like biological entities, Bob. They have their birth. They have their development, their ascendancy. They reach their heights of power, and then they decline. Because there is no rule that states that just because a country comes into being, that it's going to be there forever, the way people envisioned it. I mean, look at history, at the changes that have occurred throughout the world. I mean, as people grow old and die, so do nations. And so I don't have a great deal of faith in the fact that perhaps this country might survive. I hope it does. God knows I do.
But well, I got to thinking about some of this because
these people are not doing anything to contribute to its sense of health state or well-being.
I got to thinking about this because I saw a graphic representation of what ownership of 99% versus 1% means. And it was done as a map of the United States, Jim. And what it shows, or the way, you know, the way they did the way they did the map, is more than a little disturbing, because if U.S. land were divided like U.S. wealth, 1% would own basically the entire West, starting at the Minnesota state line and rolling south. And 90%, now where did it go? Dadgummit, it disappeared on me. But anyway, the 1% is a strip of land that runs from the very southern edge of Arizona across the southern United States, the Bayou area of Louisiana, southern Mississippi, South Alabama, South Georgia, and Florida. And it's
almost contiguously.
Yeah, that's the 1%. The 1% would own that. 99% would own, or 1% would own the first. 90% would own the. Das, sorry, 99% would own the first chunk, and 1% would get that little swath of largely dead land.
And the 99% living in that area. Would they allow the 1% in those areas to control them, do you think? Do you think that will last long?
No, I sincerely doubt it.
Well, you know, these are the things in which the seeds of revolution are planted. And there are radical changes.
You know, meanwhile, you've got this concerted push to try to paint the people that occupy Wall Street as being communists, socialists, anarchists, yada yada, what have you.
Well, these people are representing individuals who realize that there are certain injustices that are being carried out now. I mean, banks are being bailed out, this, that, and the other, but they can't have the compassion and the deep and the good sense and the humanity to try to help bail out the other people the way they bailed out some of these other banks and things like that.
Yeah, it's...
corporate entities, which are not human, are more important than human beings themselves. And that is very bad.
Well,
I hear today that the banks were backing back off those surcharges with, what do you call those cards?
Debit cards, yeah.
Card. I never use the damn thing because I don't trust it, number one. Number two, they have to charge a point-of-sale purchase, and it's just a way to rip somebody off, and it's just crazy. But these people are trying to present peacefully and to try to bring to the attention of the mindset of this country the direction in which we're going. I mean, that business in Oakland was horrible. I mean, that guy was hit by a rubber bullet. He was hit by a tear gas canister. That's what fractured his skull. It was a tear gas canister. And they had his roommate on CNN this morning describing what happened. And, you know, the guy's in the hospital, and he's not able to talk yet. He's not able to spell. He's not able to read very well or communicate, but they say that they expect a full recovery. But I mean, and the mayor of Oakland is in a world of hurt because of what happened there. I understand that I'm not sure who he or she is, but
she's
certainly having to eat some crow over that. I'm glad to see it.
Well, she backed up in a hurry and said she supports the Occupy movement. Now, whether she really does or not is an open question, I suppose.
Oh, it's a matter of just political expediency to her. I mean, you know, it's a matter of, you know, how can I stay in office and how can I, you know, be like Governor LePetitmaine, so to speak, that type thing.
Work.
Are good things, and if the Tea Party can go up, there and look like something out of Night of the Living Dead when I felt them up there in Washington back in 2010, then why can't these Occupy people go there and try to make a statement and bring to the public for that, you know, there are things that are going on in this country that are not going to work. They're not right. And this is a warning. This is a clarion call to reasonable sanity, in my opinion.
And that, well, mine as well, and most of the Horn family, or if not all of the Horn family, Jim, the problem being that we've got a for-profit media out there that are spinning it in a completely different direction.
Well, that's because they're paid for by the corporations, and the corporations don't like the...
Of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations.
Yeah, they don't like that. Well, listen, I've taken up a bunch of your Friday night evening on the porch, so I'm going to ring off here and let somebody else come to the microphone, and I hope you have a good weekend.
And you as well, Jim, and yeah.
You better keep that wolfsbane and those garlic clothes hung by the door, because you never can tell.
No, absolutely not. But we've got a ferociously friendly black Labrador retriever who's adopted us, who sits on the porch. So maybe he'll let us know if the wolves come up.
Well, who knows? Maybe my wolf will come up tonight too. I call him Wolfen.
That works.
And remember. Good night.
Indeed, Jim. Take care. Bye now. Jim loves his Halloween, but Jim, more than anything else, has a sense of perspective, and an understanding of what it means to live in the midst of history. You know, history isn't something old, and the future isn't something, you know, out there. The very definition of the present is the convergence of history and the future in the same place. And so while you and I and the normal people understand that that things like Mississippi's fetus in law and Alabama's golly, don't we hate immigrant tomato pickers law, and Georgia's, and North Carolina funding so-called crisis pregnancy centers. We understand that those are legitimate threats to the Republic, the resurrection of nasty old nullification. The other side persists with its lunacy. I offer to wit Arizona Representative Trent Franks. Who, you know, you decide. Is he sick? Is he crazy? Can we find common ground and say that he's crazy and sick? Just listen.
We understand that when we're granting the rights of marriage, that's a special right, Tony. That's something we have suggested is clearly the best possible way to see children raised in the best possible environment to launch the next generation. And we believe that with all of our hearts as a society. I think most people understand that. And so we've set aside this special area of the law that says we're going to respect traditional marriage of a man and a woman, because that is the launching pad of the next generation. And let's face it, we have made a special exception in the law that gives special consideration and recognition to that. And when people would come along and blur that distinction and say, well, that should apply in every way. It not only is a complete undermining of the principles of family and marriage and the hope of future generations, but it completely begins to see our society break down to the extent that foundational unit of the family that is the hope of survival of this country is diminished to the extent that it literally is a threat to the nation's survival in the long run.
Thanks to Right Wing Watch for that clip of Representative Trent Franks talking to the American Family Association of Tupelo Muslipi. You got all that? Marriage equity completely begins to see our society break down to the extent that a foundational unit of the family that's the hope of survival of this country is diminished to the extent that it literally is a threat to the nation's survival in the long run. So let me see if I've got this straight. If we just keep gay people from getting married, American citizens will no longer lose their homes and be put out on the street as a result of predatory lending practices by massive mega banks via foreclosure. I got that right? If we just keep gay people from getting married, we won't have 20 million or more unemployed people in America. If we can just keep the gay people from getting married and make sure that the women are prosecuted for murder if they have an IUD, everything will be okay in America. And I return to a common theme. What the is wrong with the people that put this goober in office? Jim's right. Maybe before the oath is ever administered, these freaks ought to have to sit down and take the Minnesota Multiphasic Pulse Personality Inventory. Maybe we need because we don't. We do not have a law that says no psychopaths may serve in the Congress. We don't have a law that says no sociopaths may serve in the Congress. And I'll bet you we have got, I mean, look, Trent Franks kind of proves it, doesn't he? We've got an absolute buttload of them in the Congress. Mitch McConnell? Eric Cantor? Jesus criminy. You know, you can't hardly blame me, can you, for wanting to just sneak away somewhere and put my toes in the sand and get some sort of little drink in a hollered-out coconut shell with an umbrella in the top now, can you? Let's all go. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Pretend I don't live in it. Sunshine gonna wash my blues away. Had sweet love, but I lost it. She got too close so far, and now I'm lost in the world trying to find me a better way. Wishing I was knee-deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze and it don't seem fair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Wrote a note, said be back in a minute. Bought a boat and I sailed off in it. Don't think anybody's gonna miss me anyway. I'm on a permanent vacation. The ocean is my only medication. Wishing my condition ain't ever gonna go away. Cause now I'm knee deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair.
smile in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. This champagne sure washing over me. It's a sweet, sweet life, living by the salt of the sea. One day you can be as lost as me. Change your geography. Maybe you might be. Knee deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Come on in, the water's nice. Find yourself a lip slice. Grab a backpack of lies you never know until you try. When you lose yourself, you find the key to paradise.
Let's all go. I know you don't. Sometimes that stuff just gets me through the day. Because one of these days, and I hope it isn't. Please, Canadian listeners, really, need your help. Seriously. I need a massive Canadian letter-writing campaign encouraging the Canadian Parliament to make the Turks and Caicos, invite them to become a part of Canada itself. Please? Yeah, I'd love that. I mean, you know, not that we've got anything in common whatsoever, but, you know, flush broadcast from the Southern Command. And I happen to know they have internet on the Turks and Caicos Islands. That would be nice. I might be a little, a little saner, perhaps. By the way, some birthday wishes going out. Anonymous birthday wishes, anonymously offered and anonymously sent and to an anonymous person. But this particular birthday wish goes out to someone who turned 55 today. I'm told via email that she is one of the finest 55-year-old carbon-based female life forms in all of Baltimore County, if not the entire state of Maryland. We're talking about the seventh state admitted to the United States under the Constitution and currently ranked fifth in population density. No small potatoes there! Happy birthday, indeed. You want to know who that was? Okay, that was the Zac Brown Band with Jimmy Buffett in the background. Jack asked, writing from Shreveport. He said, although it didn't sound exactly like them, I was guessing Buffett and Taylor. Who did that song? Zac Brown Band. Name of the song is Knee Deep. Knee Deep. Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice? Meanwhile, Marty must be in a bad place today. I'm still waiting for Radio Rwanda to decide that it's in their best interest to rehabilitate the image of Charles Manson, get him out of prison, and get him into government. I'll bet he's a fine, fine, fine conservative by now, Charlie. As far as the South is concerned, more are riding in. Let them go off on their own. They contribute very little to the betterment of the country, and we can save a lot of northern tax money welfare that they live on. I'm willing to bet that there would be a big immigration of the southern population to the north, leaving the rogue southern states devoid of all those who didn't exactly hold the same beliefs. I've had it with them. And even that, is an echo of sentiments from 150 years ago. I think it was a Boston newspaper, maybe a New York one, that in 1860 said, if the South wants to go, let them go. Goodbye. Well wishes. Be well. Frustrating, isn't it? You know, you're raised to love your country, and then half of your country can't do anything but dog cuss your country. The cognitive dissonance is palpable. It really, really is. Because on the one hand, Southerners line up around the block to join the American military. You want some shooting and killing done? Your Southerners are generally up for the game no matter who, no matter where, and no matter the corporation that we're actually doing it for. But when it got, you know, when it got really brutal, things like the Second World War, the First World War, and, yeah, the Civil War, lined up in droves to go and do someone else's bidding. The Confederate Army was not made up of all Ashleys on their horses with their fine livery and spiffy gray uniforms. The Southern Army was made up of people with rags wrapped around their feet instead of boots. And they died in their scores, and they won battles when they were outgunned and outmanned. It is, in fact, you know, there's our friend Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers writes about the duality of the Southern thing. And sometimes I wonder if it's not the duality, with all respect to Patterson, he is a genius. I wonder if it's not the duality, but rather the dichotomy. Because at the same time that they decry the federal government, they damn sure like the roads that federal government builds. And they like the money that flows literally north to south. Kind of hard. It's difficult to comprehend on this end. It really and truly is. But by the same token, let's remember that all these issues are not strictly Southern issues. I offer you, for instance, the city of New York. The city of New York, of course, there's a transit authority there, buses and subways and so forth. But in some cases, the city of New York contracts with private carriers to provide bus service. Such was the case with the Private Transportation Corporation. It was contracted by the city of New York to operate public B110 bus as a franchise agreement. The bus, the bus company, which is run by an Orthodox Jewish family, and serves a largely Jewish ridership, has imposed its orthodoxy on the bus. Remember Rosa Parks? The bus line's been in operation since 1973, and like I said, operates predominantly in a Hasidic Jewish area. Doesn't run on Friday nights or Saturdays, you know, following being observant of Shabbat. And imposes its certainly Orthodox and arguably Hasidic views on riders of the bus. If you are female, you are required on this bus to go to the back. Seats at the front of the bus are reserved for male passengers. It's not just Jewish females either, or Orthodox females. It's any female. If you just happen to be in that part of town and you get on this bus to go for a ride, you, lady, are going to the back of the bus. Time magazine said the following: for men and women in ultra-conservative religious traditions, keeping the sexes separate is still fairly routine. Women often sit behind men or a barrier in mosques. The Amish also require different seating areas in worship services, and Hasidic Jews similarly require men to sit or walk in front of women, since even seeing them would violate the men's purity. I guess, maybe the men can't control themselves. You know, I'm a 21st century guy. I've been to the beach several times, seen all kinds of women walking up and down the beach in string bikinis and little monokinis and tankinis. And you know, never once have I just run up and ravished on one. And I've never seen anybody else do it neither. Back in my bad old misspent youth days, I've been in places where, well, they had wet T-shirt contests. There was beer involved. And even there, with a bunch of drunk men, ain't nobody was reaching out and grabbing or ravishing. But apparently, if you're deeply, deeply into your religion, you might be. You you don't want to take the chance. So women to the back of the bus in New York City. I'm not talking about Birmingham. I'm not talking about Montgomery, Alabama. I'm not talking about Greensboro, North Carolina. I'm talking about New York City, where taxpayer dollars subsidize a bus that discriminates against all women and forces them to the back of the bus because God wants it that way. How about that? It ain't just Kentucky anymore. Because, you see, the overarching problem is the fundamentalism. It ain't just fundamentalist Baptists, fundamentalist Methodists. It's fundamentalist everybody's. It's fundamentalism. Two female reporters who happened to get on the bus were informed by the bus driver that they were not allowed to sit in the front of the bus because it was reserved for male passengers. In New York City. Let that sink in. Well, yeah, Lottie, the reason nobody reached out at a wet T-shirt contest was because the 500-pound bouncer would break your arm. That's it. Maybe that was a deterrent for some. But for a lot of us, it was just a matter of sitting there with your back to the bar and watching it and going, dang, she's pretty. Just sort of awe and wonder struck. You know, most young men are tongue-tied in the first place. I mean, how do you hit on a beautiful woman in a wet T-shirt? Hey, honey, love your T-shirt. No. While the human race is a mess most of the time, most of us under ordinary circumstances, even guys, can behave ourselves. It's the real hung-up, screwed-down loonies that sit around all the time. I mean, really? Do you think for an instant that Mississippi's Ballot Initiative 26 was written by a woman? Because it weren't. It were written by a man sitting around obsessing about lady parts. For reasons that I can't begin to fathom. And mixing it all up with the lunacy of original sin and Eve and, you know, she was naked. My God, how did Adam stand it? Now, the funny thing with the New York story is that the transit authority, when they got wind of it, have told the bus company in no uncertain terms that we don't care if it's your religious rules. It ain't allowed. It's discrimination. It remains to be seen how this will play out. Of course, Lottie, yeah, Mississippi's Ballot Initiative 26 was written by a Christian because it is an attempt, as is the marriage business, to enforce Christian right-wing fundamentalist Christian doctrine on the rest of us who don't even hold to it. I don't know if we say it enough, but we must recognize all of these things as attempts to subvert the First Amendment and compel
religion. I'm not going to be a better person if I'm going down to this viper's nest of gossip and innuendo that meets every Wednesday and Sunday, twice on Sundays, downtown 2 miles from me. I'm just not. There is no way that going to church can make you a better person. Only you can make you a better person. And odds are, if you go down and start mixing with the hypocrites, you won't be, whatever progress you've made will go backwards. You will become a worse person because you will be a snarling backbiter like the rest of them. Like that godforsaken Joel Osteen we played last night. He wants to love the gay away. Well, instead of doing that, why not cherish people for who and what they are? Because sometimes there are elements of being gay that go outside sexuality. I know it's hard for the fundamentalists to conceive of that because that's all they think about. But sometimes we are people who are a totality. We are not gay or straight. We're defined not simply by what goes on when the light goes off. And for the life of me, I can't comprehend anybody who can't comprehend that. And it really does, I mean, it makes ugly things happen in my lizard brain. Because you start thinking about how fun it would be to see Rick Santorum's nose blossom red if somebody would put their fist into it. And I'm nonviolent. Wow, where are the funny stories? Yeah, I know. Oh, in the, last night I mentioned that I was still waiting for the right wing to define Occupy as having been fomented and formulated by, the Black Panthers in conjunction with the Illuminati while meeting in the Bohemian Grove. Bill Margaret. Phony journalist Andrew Breitbart is apparently having a hard time getting on TV, or so he says. You know, they've all got these weird persecution complexes. I don't think we've got serious enough psychotropic medications really to deal with your average right winger. The only thing that really helps is like a Thorazine dart at 10 paces through a blowgun. Hey, Andrew! Yeah, all better now. Right? So instead, and we do have Canadian listeners. So instead, Breitbart has taken to appearing on Canadian television. A program called The Source, with some goober, by the name of Ezra Levant. This you gotta hear.
Perhaps America's greatest expert on these Occupy protests is our next guest, Andrew Breitbart, the rebel journalist who joins us now from Los Angeles. Andrew, thank you very much for being here again.
Expert?
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on because in the United States there seems to be an embargo on allowing for me to go on the television to tell people exactly what is going on in the...
You reckon that might be because he's a liar? He's not a real journalist? You reckon it might have something to do with the fact that he makes crap up? Nah. He's being embargoed. There's a conspiracy.
Occupy movement.
Well, they may try and embargo you, but I think people get around that embargo. They go to your website, biggovernment.com, and Breitbart TV, Breitbart.com. I think you're getting out despite the media. Here in Canada, we have the same thing. The consensus media is on side with these protests, but we at the Sun News Network are critical, and we think that these protests are fizzling. Is it your observation, by looking all around America and Canada, that these Occupy protests...
Objection, leading question. Oh, what am I doing?
sort of run out of steam, or at least in the media, or are they still being championed and cheerleaded by the consensus media?
Well, they are being...
Cheerleaded? What is that, Canadian English? Cheerled? Sorry, I'm being snarky.
Cheerleaded by the consensus media. There's a massive cover-up of the origins of this. This is a group that many of us around...
Oh, come on, say it. New Black Panther Party. Come on, Andrew!
...on the world now, international socialists, communists, and anarchists who...
Wait a minute, I've heard this before. I'm just sure I've heard this before. Let me see if... It, yeah, there it is. There it is. Somebody's been lifting lines from John Sayles movies again.
What am I talking about?
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord.
Amen.
Do you know his name?
Have
you seen his glory? Have you felt the warm and comfort of his precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise his holy name. Praise his blessed spirit. Praise his everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now. Listen to me. The Prince of Darkness is upon the lion. Now in the Bible, his name is Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. Right now on earth today, his name is Bolshevik, Socialist, Communist, Union Man, Lord of Untruth, Sower of Evil Seed, enemy of all that is good and pure, and this creature walks among us.
Yep. What did I tell you? They don't have original ideas. They just recycle them. I don't care if it's come on, John C. Calhoun. Jim and I were talking about it. God, what's wrong with my brain? I don't know anything. Anything. Nullification. I don't care if it's nullification or the red baiting. They just recycle the same old crap over and over again. To wit.
Like to find a crisis, whether it be in Greece or at a WTO meeting. This is the same group of people, and they want to foment not just a revolution within the United States, but to foment an international...
Really? It's the same group of people? I mean, like, they can be protesting on the streets of Athens at noon, and they're back in Zuccotti Park by 5? Wow! They must have some sort of special transport pass to get through all the security lines. Well, then again, they are part of a global conspiracy, right?
National revolution. That's why they've brought in so many. That's why they've aligned themselves with the Arab Spring. That's why they've aligned themselves with pro-Palestinian, pro-Intifada groups. The mainstream media will not tell you this. An interesting video that tells the story of the actual participation versus the media false perception of this being a large international mass movement. Yesterday in the British papers, they played up a video of a helicopter that showed a thermal overview of the Occupy London. And you could see that in the 200 tents during the middle of the night, there
were
only 20 tents that were occupied with human beings. But to the common eye, one thought that this was an encampment filled with 200 people.
Huh. I believe it, too. In Occupy Toronto, one of the fellas said he likes to skedaddle off to a local condo for a hot shower. Now, let me ask you this.
They're showering? Oh, they're giving. Oh, they're violating the principles of the movement by bathing. How dare they?
Not too far away from where you are, it turned to violence the other day and full-out riot. Is that the next phase to move from hippies whining?
Who rioted, Ezra? Who rioted? Because the Occupy Oakland folks didn't riot. The cops rioted.
Nobody shot any cops in the head. The cops shot the occupiers. Okay, my Canadian listeners. Who is this jackass? Who is this clown? Does anybody pay attention to this goober?
About how they, you know, their Twitter and iPhones aren't working. Like the sort of effete, elite, university, fancy pants to the real black bloc riders. I mean, are we going to see the transformation of this to the next level in order to get to this Arab Spring type revolution? Should we in Canada be worried about an Occupy Oakland style riot too?
Well, I would say that this isn't the opinion of a rebel journalist. These are the words of the organizers themselves when they get together in a left-wing bookstore with Natasha Leonard, a reporter for the New York Times, who openly talks about how the anarchists within the movement want to step things up into illegal actions against the banks and other institutions. They want to step this up and create a mob mentality. They talk about it in the emails that we were able to expose as well, that showed that they wanted to make it as amorphous as humanly possible, which was the suggestion of MSNBC News's Dylan Radigan to bring in as many people. And then it would be the anarchists and the socialists within that would use their time-tested strategies of poking and prodding the police. And that's what they're trying to do, is to poke and prod the police in order to have a Kent State moment. That is exactly what Donnie Deutsch, formerly of NBC, said that needs to happen, is that they need to have a Kent State moment where the people say that.
Donnie Deutsch? Really? Really? Andrew Breitbart is citing Donnie Deutsch in his spiffy little pinstripe suits in the morning on Morning Joe as a leader of the anarchists? Damn! I don't know, Andrew. I'd try sobriety, buddy. I'd quit with the brown acid. Or horse tranks, or whatever it is you're on. Because I'm pretty sure that Donnie Deutsch doesn't walk down to Zuccotti Park and say, take me to your leader. Oh, wait, I am your leader. Donnie Deutsch?
The police and the authorities overreacted to this innocent group of people. These people are highly scripted, and they know how to agitate. But
then show us the script. Oh, wait, what, Andrew? Did you not have time to make up the script like you made up the Shirley Sherrod thing, like you helped make up the Acorn BS? Let's see. We got about 2 minutes left of this. Still time to work in the new Black Panther Party, Andrew. I mean, you haven't brought in the scary black folks yet.
Hopefully within the last 3 years in America, because we have a community organizer as president, people are now sophisticated in interpreting how international activists and an activist president are able to use the mainstream media in order to try and foment...
What, that's about that, huh? Barack Obama is using the mainstream media... I mean, we've only had a few episodes of this program where we have bemoaned the fact that the White House messaging team doesn't have the first flippin' clue how to use the so-called mainstream media. And you know what? When we did it, you and I, we cited chapter and verse. We cited actual examples of the White House really missing the boat on getting its message out. But then again, if you're Andrew Breitbart, you show up in front of the camera and you start repeating Jabberwocky. And there's some portion of this once great nation that takes it for gospel.
Evolution, and people are not biting.
Well, let me ask you this. If they get their Kent State moment, I mean, if police perhaps overreact, or if there is a death, what does that accomplish? I mean, there might be some local recriminations and inspections of police conduct, but what's the big payoff? If there were, I mean, the Mohawk Warriors, that's an armed Aboriginal group, is joining the Occupy Toronto group. I think that portends there's a possibility of violence. But what are they expecting will happen?
Oh, well, okay, so we didn't work in the well, we were, Jesus, is it really that bad in Canada?
Psychoticus, Kath, anybody? Are you? I remember when I traveled up to do a little talk at Williams College in Massachusetts, and the bartender there was talking about the difference between, you know, Williamstown, Massachusetts, which is out on the western end near the New York and Vermont borders, and you know, Boston. And I'll never forget, I laughed. Maybe I shouldn't have. He said, them? They think we're still out here fighting the Indians. Eesh. Is that what it... Really? Are there people in Canada who... the Mohawk warriors are coming down. They're going to scalp the women folk. Quick, to the stockade!
Happened from that. We only have a minute left. So tell me, if there is violence, how does that pay off politically other than for a news story?
I would say that in one word, martyrdom. They're looking for a Rodney King. Just yesterday, the big meme on the left is that...
Rodney King? It did... Dude, 12 steps. Take them now.
An Iraq war veteran was injured, that his scalp was fractured, or that his head, his skull was fractured in a fracas.
See, that's what happens when you bring up the Mohawk warrior. Andrew starts thinking about scalps. Yeah, Marty caught on that phrase that Andrew was using. Consensus media? Huh? Yeah, right. And Mark in Florida reminding us all that the RepublicanSexOffenders.com drives my point home. You know, we do. I guess we even have unintended consequences here. David in South Carolina writing, and he says, true family humor. He said, before I embarrass my daughter Candace, let me congratulate her on making all A's on her report card for the first 9 weeks of her ninth grade year. Well, let me congratulate her, too, David. Especially great since she's taking 10th grade English and math in the ninth grade. That said, here's my chuckle for the day. She had a quiz this week, and one of the questions was to name the two South Carolina U.S. senators. She slipped up and spelled Jim Demint the way I spell it, Jim Demented. She was telling me about the quiz yesterday when all of a sudden she realized what she'd done. I apologized, and then we had a big laugh. I can't wait to see what her teacher says. You might want to wait, David. Who knows? You might become an enemy of the state. Mark noting that, unfortunately, a caller from Occupy San Luis Obispo did mention to Tom Hartman that a skinhead group has infiltrated their presence. Must be on the Breitbart payroll. Look, you see skinheads and Nazis show up, somebody's helping, right? Yeah. Kate responding to the statement that about the South, they don't contribute anything. She said, that may have been stated by someone who's never lived there. Please consider the music, the warm humor, the beautiful language, the multicultural influence that makes the rich texture of the tapestry of our society. Oh, and the food. Phil Harris is rolling around in my head. That's what I like about the South. Let's not lump the whole South into one crazed, religious, redneck, ignorant NASCAR crowd, Kate, way out west, who can eat grits with sugar or crystal. And puts crystal on her vanilla ice cream. And that's the frustrating point, is because, you know, behind the cornbread curtain, there are people like David in South Carolina and David in Tennessee and Matt Osborne writing his butt off in northwest Alabama and a whole host of others who are living liberally and progressively and paying a price that many of us cannot even begin to comprehend. Fritz writing in from Arkansas, again, behind the cornbread curtain. Breitbart and the Sun News Network of Canada. Several weeks ago, a Canadian DXing friend of mine online told me about the Sun News Network. It's an aspiring cable channel in Canada that wants to do in Canada what Fox News does here in the U.S., pretty much a right-wing propaganda viewpoint. I'm sure Breitbart couldn't get on the CBC or any of the other mainstream TV channels in Canada, CTV, Global, etc. Sun News also operates an over-the-air TV channel in a few Canadian cities, but will cease broadcasting with that medium and go cable only after November 1st. So that explains a lot. Thanks, Fritz. Having a hard time talking now. I'm sorry, I had a blinking light here and I forgot about it. Hey, welcome to the program.
That's okay. I slipped out on the porch.
Oh, okay. Well, but you stepped back. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, happy belated anniversary to the horn.
Oh, well, thank you very kindly.
Yeah. You know, the thing about Breitbart that I find interesting is the fact that Sam Cedar actually has debates with him on Twitter. And one of the things that he said that shut up Breitbart, he said, I've been looking at your site, Big Government, and I'm just wondering where you get your funding from, because you only have two ads on the main page. So could you please tell me who funds you?
Any answer?
No answer after that. He was pretty active, just going on and on about the consensus media or whatever it was that he was talking about.
What does that even mean?
He throws that out there. I mean, I think people need to understand that that guy is not, see, people do this to their detriment, Bob. They say he's crazy, he's insane. He's not doing that. He's provoking people in the media, and you can understand that when you hear him sub for other radio shows. Because he's one of those pathological type talkers. He explains his whole plan. The same thing with, the Glenster. You know, he does the same thing. I mean, there are videos of Glenn explaining it in the boardroom. Oh, and this is how we're really going to get him. I mean, they loathe everybody. And that's what a lot of liberals need to understand. A lot of liberals need to understand this. They're not crazy. They plan this out methodically, what they're going to say, what they're going to do, and then they laugh about it. They don't respect anyone except their pocketbook. That's key, people.
And they only respect the pocketbook if it's doing what they want the pocketbook to do. Is that a logical extension?
Yeah, I mean, that's a logical extension. I think people like Breitbart, all of these people, I mean, if you really want to say what they are, they're ideological mercenaries. They'll go on either side if the money's there, but just so happens the Republican money is so long. And anyone who thinks that's going away, think again.
So if there was some big liberal money to help him become a progressive, he'd do a, you think Breitbart would do an Arianna Huffington and get liberal in a minute?
Well, you know, he's done it before. He said he was a liberal. I would love to see some of his activism that he was involved in, because I can bet that somebody was paying him under the table to do crazy protests or whatever, what he was doing in the 70s, or unless that's just a big lie. But I think what's really important is to see is what Sam Cedar was talking about. And what he said was, this is important. When someone like Breitbart talks about subsidies and being funneled through Soros, okay, all right, that's fine. Let's look into Breitbart's websites, Big Government, the Breitbart site. Okay, who funds Breitbart?
And so, but see, that's a larger question that you can apply to almost any right-wing media, David, because as I've pointed out in the past, and I'm not going to get into too much detail with this, if you spend 3 hours a day for 5 days a week and you've got a little notebook next to you, and you listen to Hannity, and you listen to Flush, and you listen to Beck, okay, no matter how many listeners they've got, and you take down every advertisement that runs, by the time you're done, you can, and you just look at the list in front of you, there is no way that those advertisers can support the salaries that these individuals make, let alone all the executives behind them inside something like the Premier Radio Network or the EIB Golden, whatever it is, or whatever it is that Glenn Beck broadcasts behind. Do you see my point?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there is right-wing media are subsidized beyond the means or beyond the comprehension of most of us, and they are subsidized that way because they want the message out. On the other hand, you know, here tonight, just by way of pointing out, I mentioned that between now and midnight Monday, we need to get 125 $10 contributions.
Mm.
We got one.
Well,
and that's not to say that I'm on the same level of reach or that my ego is not that big, David, and you know that.
Yeah, I know.
But you understand the larger point. It's not me. It's everybody. It's Rick Smith struggling to stay afloat. It's Mike Malloy struggling to stay afloat. It's everybody struggling to stay afloat. You know, the bloggers, reporters, citizen journalists, what have you. And if the deep background and deep pockets were there behind Occupy like that goofy freak says it is, you know what? It would be a lot different looking movement, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would be. And, you know, I wanted to mention this because I saw this. It ties into exactly what we're talking about, how things move in increments and it's there before you know it at your doorstep. I saw this great movie, this great documentary called Art of the Steal. It's an amazing documentary, Bob, because what it does is it talks about how the biggest, listen people, the biggest art stealing theft in history happened in Philadelphia. And in the documentary, they talk about this guy who started a foundation called the Barnes Foundation. And he had more paintings, Bob, more paintings than New York, Paris, more priceless art than any of the museums in Chicago, you name it, Rome, Italy, go down the list. they were all in his mansion, in his building that he put in. And he wanted to do this because he wanted to keep it away from the private interests. And he thought ahead of time, Bob, because he understood that this art, this modern art, before it was valuable, he went over to Paris because people were mocking him. And he's an interesting guy in himself. Dr. Barnes actually funded his way through college at Harvard through boxing. He came from literally nothing. So he funded his way by boxing, ladies and gentlemen. But he had the intelligence when he went to the university, he studied, he got his doctorate. And then after that, he is the one who invented the silver alloy that they put in eyes for VD, the Argyle. And that made him richer than his wildest dreams. But what he had an interest was in art, because he understood, and this is why this movie is amazing, he understood that art is not just a painting. It's not just expression. Art is life. And he brought these paintings back over. I'm sure he got them for a really good deal. Now, I'm not saying Walmart price, but we're talking Picasso's, Renoir's, Matisse. Everyone was laughing at him, Bob. Everyone was laughing at him. This art, it's not a focus. It's nothing. He brought them all back. And this is the key. He took all of the art and he organized it in a way that was unlike any gallery in history. He understood when you look at a painting, you aren't looking at a painting or a particular historic period. You are looking at us. And he took the art that he saw and he put objects around it that were inspired or influenced by it. And that is how he taught people art in his school. He had a private school that he put together. So a lot of the people, and basically anyone could come and look at this art. But Philadelphia, they were angry about this because they wanted their hands on this art when it started skyrocketing in price. The museum. And in this, what the story does is it unfolds and you begin to realize that this guy was so ahead of his time. So ahead of his time, he understood that if he didn't put in proper place dams and barriers that they could not get their hands on this art, that we that the foundation was going to have serious trouble. But the problem is, the man who had the most priceless art collection in the entire world, he died in an accident on a roadster, going too fast, in his 70s. But he planned a will, but the will was not strong enough, Bob. The will was not strong enough. They got in through the inside, and the Philadelphia Inquirer just hammered over and over and over about this place needs renovations. This place needs renovations. That's what this needs. And they finally got into that place. And I'll tell you something. the big moral lesson is that everything happens in slow increments.
Oh, without, no, you don't. Very seldom in a cultural setting does a massive change occur overnight.
Right.
I mean, people like to look, for instance, at the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki as the dawning of the atomic age. Well, it really beyond the horrors that it imposed upon the people who lived there, not to mention the horrors, for instance, of the civilians who were burned alive in the firebombing of Tokyo. You know, no atomic weapons there, but it did more damage than the bomb did. No, there was no massive sea change. There was no massive sea change when we landed on the moon. The internet itself, of course, was heralded as it's going to change everything, and that was part of the tech bubble of the late 90s.
Right.
But things, you know, that's not to say that things don't change, David, but they don't change like that.
Right.
And so, consequently, I guess it's a human flaw or foible or failing that we somehow expect that that's going to happen. The right wing fundamentalist tendency to look toward the day that Jesus comes back. That's another one of those fantasies of immediate change. Even, you know, to a certain extent, the marketing team that came up with Barack Obama's 2008 slogan might have made a profound mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, hope and change you can believe in. Change doesn't happen like that. And
right.
when you get into cultural or social or governmental realms, change becomes by definition glacial in its movement. I mean, slow.
Yeah. I think that's a big problem what we're facing. How do we combat the fact that we are moving so slow in increments that are not going to be patient enough for the population? I think a lot of progressives and a lot of liberals, they really overestimate the public's gullibility when it comes to that, and especially with certain liberals as well, because the slow increments that are happening right now are never going to be enough for that group that you have.
I mean, look, that's one of the reasons that what is so important inside the Occupy movement is that it persist. It must
right.
persist. It can't fold its tents. If it does, any further movement beyond it is going to be very, very difficult.
Mm.
It's got to persist, and we've got to expand the conversation about the, for instance, the pernicious effect of money in politics. And you know what? You look at things often in the same way I do,
right.
And a lot of times you can gauge the effectiveness of a movement by the way the way the other side responds to it. And I saw a classic example of that today, and it is the response of the right wing to Occupy. In one case, let's see. I saw an editorial. Get this. This is beautiful. The Occupy Wall Streeters destroying the First Amendment. Written, of course, by a creep by the name of Hans J. Spakovsky. And, or Hans A. von Spakovsky. He says the OWS protesters don't seem to understand or don't care that the First Amendment provides that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition government for redress of grievances. And he says, well, that includes not only the ability to speak out on political issues and the merits of candidates for public office, but to spend money on persuading others about the merits of those candidates. Well, see, that's the thing, David. Nobody's saying they can't spend money.
Right.
We're talking about limiting where the money can come from. And we're talking about repealing, you know, Citizens United.
Mm.
And suddenly, and so what you see is the effect of Occupy Wall Street measured by the fact that the right wing, the money machine feels threatened enough now to respond to it and claim that their rights are the Occupy Wall Streeters are destroying the First Amendment because they're not going to let me buy my government no more. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, it tells you a lot. It tells you that a lot of the right wing is frightened in the regard that they know that a movement is building, and they want to crush it at all costs or completely undermine it in the various tactics that they go through. And they know how to do it so skillfully. You know, you just turn on the talk radio, and they're just waiting for that incident where they can jump in, completely grab the narrative, and then just run with one. Just all it's going to take is one stupid incident,
right? And one and out of that they will generalize to the entire movement. Andy just wrote in from California. He said, "Funny that the corporate media is supposedly championing the Occupy Wall Street movement, yet one of the supposed bastions of the U.S. right-wing whipping target media, NPR, had a blackout on coverage, and all you heard from the corporate media was, 'We don't know what they want. What do they want?'"
You know, it's interesting that when the Occupy Oakland movement was happening at the peak, at the peak of resistance, where the police were about to start firing the tear gas canisters, that's when all the media went black. They didn't want to cover it anymore. They're like, everyone just shut it off, and like at the same time. So it was coordinated in that sense. Well, we're not going to put the police in that light.
Right. And yet, on the other hand, look at what has happened to a young woman by the name of Caitlin Curran. She's a journalist. She works as a web producer for WNYC Public Radio International and a show called The Takeaway. Well, she made a sign and took it down to Occupy Wall Street and was photographed. And when WYNC found out about it, they didn't waste a minute. They canned her, David.
Mm.
There's plenty of criticism to go around in the for-profit media, but as Andy has pointed out, the behavior of NPR is particularly weird. Or not weird, but particularly telling, because, you know, they don't run advertisements for, you know, Ivory dishwashing soap and Milka Magnesia. They run on humongous financial contributions given to them in large part by massive government contractors and oil companies. That's why so many people refer to NPR as National Petroleum Radio. In this particular instance, Caitlin Curran worked for the so-called competition, which is Public Radio International. It used to be American Public Radio.
Right.
But they're still, you know, they're still operating on the same model. And for some reason or another, the clampdown has a vice on it in that particular realm of media. And it deserves further investigation.
It sort of reminds me of the Ned Beatty speech in Network. I bet you NPR goes through a similar speech every single day. The world's a business and all, just basically shades of that over and over again. And I guess I can sympathize with a lot of people who work in NPR, who are radio DJs, who are personalities, who are program directors and so forth over there, but they have to understand that, they're being completely bought out little by little in the same way what I was talking about how someone gets into your, greatest prize art collection.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Bob, as always, it's been a great discussion. For people who want to check out that movie, it's called The Art of the Steal. And
I'm still trying to get around to watching the Scorsese film you mentioned.
Oh yeah. That's a great piece too. So people, if you want to check it out, it's an amazing story in itself, and it's a moral parable to the times that we live in now, and how to hold on to the treasures in your culture and history, and how to hold on to them for dear life, because that's really what the whole essence of art is. It's our complete picture of life.
Exactly. Vita brevis est, sed ars longa est. Life is short, but
exactly.
but art endures. David, have a wonderful weekend, buddy.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
David, our pop culture correspondent, calling from Maine, moving onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. It's Mike from the Black Hole that's Iowa.
Well, hey, Mike. How you doing?
Oh, all right. Considering it's going into Halloween and Michelle Bachman came to town, I thought I'd go out and listen to what she had to say.
Oh, boy, that had to be fun.
Hey, she actually made sense in one thing.
I can't wait to find out what it was.
Oh, I think you would agree with this, and it would be something that somebody in the Democratic Party should start thinking about, that she, when she becomes president, isn't going to want to have this kind of tie-up in the Senate, that she's going to go out there and get herself 13 more Republican senators, so she isn't going to have to worry about this 60-vote thing.
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You're right.
The Democratic Party saying that.
No, and that's one thing that I've kind of pointed to from time to time, Mike, is the fact that we're not we focus so much energy on the presidential election that, to our peril, we forget that what the right wing is probably focusing on is that, well, you know, they don't have to worry about the House. They're going to keep the House. So their focus is, look at the trolls that they've got running for president. That tells you that that what they're focused on is getting the Senate, doesn't it?
They're looking at Clinton's last 4 years for Obama's last 4 years.
In other words, rendering him what they'll do is they'll render him absolutely impotent, or they will present him with a bunch of crazy laws that that the corporatist advisors that he has will say, well, you know what, that's not a bad idea. Why don't you sign that one into law?
If he gets any more Supreme Court nominations, John Roberts will probably be the one telling him who to appoint.
There you go.
You know, but I thought with it being Halloween that I'd run into something I'd written back during the Clinton administration when they weren't really doing nice things for the American public, and it happened to be that it fits into the Halloween specter of the houses of Democrats are akin to those of vampires. They contain no mirrors.
Oh, profound. Very well said. Introspection is not or self-examination is not our long suit.
Yeah. But, Herman Cain is 100% correct when he says 999 about his tax plan. The problem is that nobody seems to remember Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. The 999 is correct, but everybody's reading it in the wrong language.
Yeah, no.
You got it. I mean, under that Cain tax plan, one group have said that under it, Warren Buffett would pay no income tax whatsoever. If you figured everything that is not capital gains under him, $40 million of his $63 million was capital gains, according to some estimates, and that would mean $23 million otherwise. That would reduce 9% of that's $2.07 million. If he spent it all on new goods, that would be another $2.07 million. He'd be paying $4.14 million against $6.9 million that he did pay. Who in the hell is going to be paying this money for Warren Buffett to get a tax refund from the Herman Cain plan?
It's a nightmare. But then again, Herman Cain is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, we need to go back to a Republican comedian, I think, from the 60s. I think he was Republican, a guy named Mort Saul.
Oh, I remember the name, yes.
Do you remember what he had to say about Richard Nixon?
No.
You don't?
I'm not that old, Mark.
Saul gave this line out of who would you buy a used car from this man about Richard Nixon?
Oh, that was his. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need to update that to would you buy a used pizza from Herman Cain?
Or just use the used car analogy and hang the sign over every one of the little little trolls, because you know what? I wouldn't buy a used car from Willard Romney. God knows, I wouldn't buy one from Rick Perry. The thing would probably fall apart before it came off the lot. And well, you know, in the free market, just caveat emptor, son. Too bad for you.
The little thing that Brad Friedman has on Willard Romney. Do you know where Romney's voting residence was when he voted for Scott Brown in the primary and the general or the election for the U.S. Senate?
No, I don't.
His son's basement. It wasn't the million-dollar mansion in California. It wasn't the million-dollar mansion in New Hampshire. It was his son's basement.
Which was the only place that they owned in Massachusetts, right?
And there's one Republican who I think may well be a Mormon, that John something, I don't remember the guy's name.
Huntsman?
No, not Huntsman. Huntsman's a real guy. He's actually getting in the debates. This guy isn't even invited. He's below 1%. But he wants the state of Massachusetts to investigate Romney for voter fraud.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, but we saw where that went with Ann Coulter, didn't we?
Yeah, but also apparently Romney, when he had run the Olympics and then went back to Massachusetts and wanted to run for governor, he had a small problem. Question was whether or not he was a resident of Massachusetts for the required 7 years, because apparently he hadn't paid his taxes in Massachusetts.
Oops.
So to get
well, you know, the thing that I'm waiting for on Romney, Mike, is for one of these we hate immigrants Republican candidates.
Grandpa.
To start talking about Grandpa. I mean,
yeah.
You know, his daddy was
Mexico.
Well, Grandpa moved from Utah to Mexico because he wanted to continue practicing polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when things got hot down there, he literally snuck back across the border, including his son George, who is Willard's daddy. So, Willard Romney's daddy was what these right-wingers refer to as an anchor baby.
And no, actually...
Well, no, because he was already born. Right, okay.
And if Willard's grandparents gave up their citizenship when they moved to Mexico...
Yes, they did.
If they did that, then George wasn't an American citizen... since he likely never acquired American citizenship, could not have run for governor, which he did, and won the governorship in Michigan, wasn't it?
Yes, he did.
Uh-huh. So
this is after he was an executive.
If they had given up their American citizenship, then when he was born in Mexico, he was Mexican.
Yes, he most assuredly was. He
and
could.
So,
and he ran for president at one point. I mean, you want to talk about birtherism, there's a real case.
Well, you also had Barry Goldwater. When Goldwater was born, Arizona was territory.
I think that grandfather's in, but the fact that George Romney was born outside the territorial confines of the United States speaks volumes. But, you know, Romney's a white guy, so nobody's ever going to raise that issue.
Yeah, and John McCain down in the Panama Canal.
Well, John McCain wasn't born in the Canal Zone.
No,
he was born in
Panama City, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was born in a hospital in Panama City that was not any part or portion of American territory.
No. The thing, though, is that the way I read the Constitution there is if one of the parents is an American citizen, that makes you a natural-born citizen. Because they weren't going to exempt Thomas Jefferson's children that might have been born in Paris, France, when he was the ambassador to France, for becoming president.
Precisely. Well, Mike, it's been a great conversation, and I was afraid maybe you were calling in to upbraid me for saying that I didn't want to go to Ames in November. But,
I don't know why you would. It would be cold.
Well, you know, my beloved Mountaineers
I've
are about
been in Ames.
my beloved Mountaineers are about to become a part of the Big 12 conference. So, neither Ames in November.
Are they becoming the 11th member of the Big 12 conference?
Yes.
You do know that the Big 10 conference has 12 members.
Right.
So apparently, if you happen to be in college today, and you don't know that 10 is 12 and 12 is 10. You can't really be a good sports fan of your college.
I can't keep up with any of it anymore. I just know that we're going to have road games in Lubbock and Ames that are not going to be fun.
Why would they join that conference?
Well, because they're desperate to get off the rapidly sinking ship that is the Big East, Mike. You know, I'm a Southern boy. I wanted into the Southeastern Conference so bad I could taste it.
Well, the Big East used to happen to have a very high-quality basketball conference.
Still does.
And the thing is, I mean, you've got these things that you've got football teams out there that the girls' basketball teams in Iowa could beat these clowns that happen to be college teams in some of the what used to be the Big 8 and then the Big 12.
Well, and geographically, it's you mentioned women's athletics. Yeah. It's going to be a real bear. To send, say, the Texas Tech women's softball team to Morgantown, West Virginia, to play a softball game.
Yeah.
Or sending the West Virginia women's gymnastics squad to Ames. I'm sorry, I'm beating on Ames, and I apologize.
No, you can beat on Ames. Ames hasn't done much of anything except beat the University of Iowa this year. So.
Well, they do that to the Hawkeyes with disturbing regularity. I don't know what it is about Iowa. They come apart every time they play them.
Apparently, it depends. The Hawkeyes used to be like Northwestern in the Big Ten. They were at the bottom. I mean, when I was a student at the University of Iowa, at the time, students could get in the end zone for five games for $12. This is 40-plus years ago. But, Iowa went up there, and I got to see them play Ohio State, Penn State, and USC in those three games. And Iowa went into the Big Ten season essentially 0-5 or 0-4.
See, I have
played three of the top 10 teams of the nation, and Iowa wasn't amongst them.
I have a real soft spot for the University of Iowa because I have so much respect for the story of Niall Kinnick.
Kinnick.
And the other part of it is that as a graduate of West Virginia University, I owe a debt of gratitude to the state of Iowa because the land grant that provided the funds to found the West Virginia University is somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, Iowa. And one of these days, I hope to go and see it.
Okay. Well, actually, I was up in Iowa City yesterday. They had a Occupy Iowa City group in the park up there. Bunch of tents out there and that and some things. So there's some people up there doing some stuff about that. Although I think the entire Occupy Wall Street area is misplaced in its thing. It should be Indict Wall Street.
Well, one hopes that that is part of the outgrowth. Mike, I've got a roll, but it's good to hear from you, my friend. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye. Mike, calling from Iowa, and it is time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We've only got to get 124 $10 contributions between now and Monday midnight in order to make our fundraising goal for the month of October. I know it's a tall order, but I'll bet you we can do it. I'm going to be optimistic. Have a wonderful weekend. Like I said, thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist Reverbo, my head writer David in Tennessee, John Fox, who makes all the technical stuff work here in the studio, even at the great distance between here and Australia, and of course Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, learn about the Appalachian apocalypse, become a part of Coal River Mountain Watch, and thus a part of